Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
Welcome to this week's edition of the Sporting Edge. I'm here with my man Bubba on this beautiful July 4th weekend. What's going on, Bub?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying the nice weather and hanging out, getting ready for some sports, getting ready to play some FanDuel and some DraftKings and baseball, and just kind of enjoying the overall view and watching the NBA. Just a bunch of stuff going on. It's pretty exciting this weekend.
Yeah, we got a lot of great stuff going on, and I mean, this is a great weekend for sports. And you know, I'd like to give a shout out to all our veterans out there and everybody who helps keep this country safe and protected. I mean, it's those people that allow us to enjoy, you know, our hobbies and our liberties, and for us too, it's definitely sports.
And it allows me to be the big mouth that I am on the radio, so I always like to be able to, because you know, I get to bitch a lot, and but it's great, and we do thank you, and I'm standing up saluting you right now because we do appreciate it, and it's great that you allow us the freedoms that we get today.
Right. So past that, I thought we'd start off the show this week, Bub, with a little talk on the NHL. I mean, I know the NHL isn't really a big part of what we do here, but, you know, if you were around and you were checking up on sports this past Thursday, or Wednesday or Thursday, there was a crazy hour in the NHL, a couple of blockbuster trades, and the first one was a straight-up trade, a one-for-one deal, arguably with the two best defenders in the league. And they went for in a one-for-one swap. It was P.K. Subban of the Montreal Canadiens and Weber of the Nashville Predators. I say Weber because I'm really not that familiar with names, but what I can tell you is that, you know, these guys, I think P.K. Subban is definitely the best defender in the NHL. I mean, we're looking at talent. We're looking at, you know, age, skill set, all that stuff. Went straight up in a one-for-one deal with the guy from Nashville, and a lot of people have said that this deal makes absolutely no sense. I mean, considering that P.K. Subban is about 6 years younger, I mean, he's got a better contract right now. The only thing that I could think that would make the Canadians, who are definitely a playoff contender and a cup contender, to make them want to trade this guy is that things weren't going so well in the clubhouse. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, Bub.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, always some of the problems that you have, you know, when you get guys. I mean, look at these guys. Athletes in general are a little bit, headstrong to begin with, and maybe he is a problem in the clubhouse. And obviously, we're more outsiders or insiders, and the deal doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know, everybody has their reasons, and they must feel that they can do better, you know, with Weber. And, I'm not second guessing them, but obviously we as outsiders always like to second guess the sporting guys.
Right. And, you know, a couple of quotes from Subban, you know, a couple of reporters were asking him, how he felt. And he said, you know, basically, I felt unwanted by the Canadians. And he said, I'm just happy to be in a situation where I can excel and feel good about myself coming to the rink every day. So this whole thing really stinks of, You know, the Canadians didn't really want to deal with this guy anymore, no matter how good he was. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Yasiel Puig with the Dodgers. I mean, those first couple years he came up, I mean, he's a superior talent. I mean, arguably, I consider him body-wise and, you know, physical skill set, you know, with his speed, height, you know, strength to a LeBron James in the NBA. I mean, the guy is a physical freak. But, you know, after the first couple years, it seemed that the people in the Dodgers organization had kind of grown tired of his antics. And although he's still on the team, he's always being brought up in trade talks. And, you know, getting back in the NHL side of things, I mean, I think this is it might be the biggest superstar that the Nashville Predators have ever brought in. And I think it definitely bolsters their chances of winning a Stanley Cup.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure it does. And, of course, he could be the Jonas Cespedes of hockey as well. I mean, listen, nobody trades a superior talent without some reason. So it's either money or money coming up or a cancer in the clubhouse, something they didn't like of what they saw. I mean, again, we see this, you know, all the time where a big name goes for a lesser name, but there's always a reason. These guys are getting paid, you know, the athletes and the GMs and everybody are getting millions of dollars. They're figuring it out. They've got whatever their metrics are they're using today, but at the end of the day, they don't do anything for no reason, so there's obviously something that we don't know about yet that I'm sure will eventually come out.
And the next deal I want to talk about is coming out of Edmonton, and this arguably seemed a little bit crazier for some people who are really close to the NHL. Edmonton traded arguably one of the best young wingers in the sport in Taylor Hall to the New Jersey Devils for Adam Larson, who is about the same age. Counts only $2 million less against the salary cap space, but isn't anywhere near as accomplished as a player. And what I'm hearing is that, you know, Edmonton had arguably the worst defense in the league, and they were willing to do almost anything to shore up that defense. And they did exactly that by making this trade. But again, I wonder, you know, Hall is one of the most dynamic young scoring forwards in the league. And I kind of wonder if they're going to eventually regret this decision. I mean, I understand the need for defense, but I don't really know if this one-for-one deal was exactly what they needed.
Well, you know, my point of view is always defense is the most important in every sport. And if they believe that he can handle the defense, you know, if he can stop the other team from scoring, it's easier to find scores. There's a lot of great scorers in the league, but there's not a lot of great defenders, and I think that is what they're looking for. And if they're going to try to build from that way, then, you know, God bless them. I think that's more – to me, defense is always the spot you want to protect.
Right. I mean, we talk about it all the time on this show. You know, defense – offense wins games, defense wins championships. And I'm hoping this puts Edmonton in a better direction. I mean, they certainly still have a lot of firepower on offense, but – I mean, just like the Subban deal, it seems that, you know, they gave away the superior player, and it seems like the reasons were a little more clear in this one. I just don't know if it was the right move for them. Moving on to a little NBA action, though, I know we've got a lot of free agent stuff to talk about, but I think one of the more interesting pieces of news that came out of the league this past week is that the NBA suspended former Bucks guard O.J. Mayo for 2 years for violating the anti-drug program. I mean, 2 years in an NBA or in any professional career, I mean, that's almost a lifetime.
Well, and, you know, obviously deservedly so. And again, it's always the question I ask you. I go, can't these guys keep clean for five frickin' minutes? I mean, what is it that they don't know? We know there's going to be drug tests. They know that they're coming after them. I mean, you know, here's a guy who just gave up $50 million. So to me, it's a problem that the players have to learn to address. I mean, again, we know they're going to do things, but for 5 minutes, can't they stay clean? It really is an irritant, but I'm glad he's gone because he deserves it.
Right, and this was a great tweet from Ken Berger, you know, a guy who's big in the NBA circle. He said, not that there's a good time to get banned for drug abuse, but this is the worst time. One team exec says Mayo cost himself $30 to $40 million by getting suspended for this long. I mean, this is, like you said, Bob, this is pretty stupid to me. I mean, I understand, you know, these guys like to live the way they want to, but I mean, for $30 or $40 million, I mean, the guy might play 5 or 6 more years, and now, you know, a lot of trouble for this guy. But that does it for the Sporting Edge. We'll see you back next segment. If you miss anything, you can find us on libertytalk.fm, and we'll be back after the break. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge. So we got done talking last segment about O.J. Mayo, and the funny thing is, you know, Mayo's dismissal is the first in NBA in close to 10 years. The last time this happened was in 2006 when Chris Anderson was dismissed for 2 years. And, you know, as a matter of fact, Anderson was reinstated after those 2 years and has been a part of the league ever since. Kind of a hard guy to miss. They call him the Birdman. He's got a lot of tattoos, but... you know, maybe O.J. Mayo can follow that path and come back to the NBA. I mean, he was a very highly touted player out of high school and is kind of underwhelmed, I'd say, so far in his NBA career. But I don't know if he's going to make it back, but we'll see about that. You know, in some baseball news, the Red Sox are getting popped a little bit for some shady dealings with their international signings. Bub, have you heard anything about this?
I have not. I don't, you know, I haven't signed any, but, you know, look, we know...
Well, if you haven't heard, I'll fill you in. So the Red Sox, you know, last year made a couple signings with some international players. And what they did, you know, was a little bit bending of the rules. So in the cases of the prospects they signed, Albert Guaimaro, Boston paid him $300,000. They also paid $300,000 and $200,000 for two lesser prospected players that were rep by the same agent. And what happened here is, since they couldn't sign all these guys under the same, you know, under the as big a contract as they wanted to, but they wanted to get all three guys, they had this agent redistribute funds that were given to the other two players to this guy, Albert Guaimaro, or however you want to pronounce it. But, you know, now they're getting popped for it because Boston will not be allowed to sign any international or amateur players during the 2016-17 season because of these violations. And more importantly, the contracts of these players are going to be voided. So the question is now, are any of these players any good? And they are. Albert Guaimaro and Simon Muzioti are ranked as the 15th and 24th best international prospects prior to last July's signing window. So I think this is a big thing for the Red Sox because they're losing a couple of big prospects. But, you know, quite frankly, they deserve it. I mean, they tried to skate around the rules, and they got away with it for a little bit. But, you know, the MLB has a very watchful eye over these sorts of things. And they came out, and the Red Sox are getting punished for it. I think they deserve it. What do you think, Bub?
Of course they deserve it. And, you know, listen, we know shady dealings go on all the time. I mean, this ain't the first time. It won't be the last time. And, you know, everybody will try to continue to get away with these types of things. I mean, it happens in every walk of life and every business you're in. It doesn't matter. If you can find a way to skirt the rules and get away with it, you're going to take a shot. Now, you know, for them, the couple hundred thousand was like, you know, pocket money because that's in, you know, now Major League Baseball. I mean, you guys are making $50 million. So it's overall, it sucks for them. But, you know, one thing about baseball, there's plenty of guys out there and they'll find others. But, and I guarantee you, other teams have done it. And I guarantee you that the Red Sox will do something like this again at some point in time. And it's just the more they stick to the rules, that's what you'll find out. And this is what happens all along sports.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff, you know, going on like this, or at least teams try to do stuff like this. And, you know, give the Red Sox a little credit for trying to game the system. But, you know, when you get caught, you got to pay the consequences. And the consequence for them is that, you know, these guys' contracts are now voided. So they'll be able to sign with any team they want. And the Red Sox are not going to be able to participate in any international signings, which, you know, as we've seen the past few years, there's been some big guys that come from international walks of life. I mean, a couple of them to name are Aroldis Chapman, Yoenis Cespedes. I mean, there's some big names, you know, overseas that come into the MLB almost every year. And, you know, this year the Red Sox are not going to be a part of that. Bub, I want to talk a little bit about Tiger Woods. I know there's not much to talk about, but a report just came out that he will not be participating in the British Open. He says he's playing a little bit now, but just isn't in the shape that he needs to be to come back and play in a major right now. So my question for you is, you know, not only does Tiger Woods come back, but does he ever win another major again, and is he ever going to be competitive again?
My personal opinion is he's never coming back. I obviously, that means he'll never win another major. I don't know that he'd ever win another golf tournament. I think that the sadness here is I don't accuse, I have no knowledge of it, but he was obviously, I think, was getting a little bit of help with his body to torque it up, and now it's breaking down. And, you know, one thing we know, when the legs go and the body goes and you get older, it's just hard to recover. You know, I don't think he'll win. If he plays on the senior tour, he may get another victory, but as far as the PGA Tour, I don't think he ever gets another win.
You know, I see your point of view, and I really hope it's wrong, because, I mean, I think Tiger Woods, say what you want about the guy and his personal life, but, you know, really was, I think, a main reason why a lot of people chose to watch golf who maybe wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, I think golf is a great sport for me and for you. You know, personally, it's a lot of fun to watch. But, I mean, Tiger Woods was kind of a guy who was transcendent among the game of golf. I think he really brought it to the heights that it's at today. I think you got to give a lot of credit to him for being just that type of athlete who was really on a pedestal, I would say, you know, in the past 20 years with only a guy like Michael Jordan.
Well, I love Tiger Woods. I thought he was great. I mean, you know, I'm sad to see that he's not going to break Jack Nicklaus's record. I'm sad to see that he's having so much trouble. I don't really care about his personal life. It's none of my business. But, you know, again, he is a guy that's just breaking down. Now, whether he's breaking down because he's just getting older and that's his body type, or he did have a little help, again, I don't really care. I mean, that stuff to me is no big deal one way or the other. I like him. I think he's great. He was one of the best killers on the course. And when he had the lead on a Sunday, he wasn't letting it go, and he had that flat stick working, and he was a guy, he wasn't going to pull a Dustin Johnson or those guys. He never puked up the lead once he had it late on a Sunday. So, you know, he's, to me, one of the greatest competitors, as I agree with you. So, you know, I hope he comes back, but I just don't see it.
Right, and that for me is the greatest thing about Tiger. I mean, you see all these guys, you know, some unknown guys, and even some of the bigger guys, you know, they get to Sunday sometimes, and they just don't have it. I mean, and that's the one thing I think that really separates, you know, the good players from the great ones. I mean, physical-wise and talent-wise, I think they're all relatively on par with each other, you know, pun intended. But, you know, a guy like Tiger who would just come out, had that laser-sharp focus, you know, unlike anybody I've ever seen except the guy I mentioned before, Michael Jordan. I mean, a guy like that, when he came out on Sunday, it was a sight to see, and it was truly amazing. And that's what I think is the only thing that might bring him back, is his ability to be a competitor and his ability to putt. I mean, if you do remember, the guy, I think, in my opinion, is the greatest putter in the history of the PGA Tour. And one thing, if you're going to be a winner on the PGA, you need to be able to putt the ball, and I think that's the only chance that Tiger has to make a comeback.
And I don't disagree with that. I mean, I said it before, he's one of the greatest competitors of all, and you give him a great comparison to Michael Jordan. I mean, you know, as you said, they're all equally talented. You know, they all hit the ball, let's say 300, 320. I mean, again, they've all got the same shots, but the guys who can do the extra, the guy who can really do it when it counts and is not overwhelmed by the circumstances and the pressure that goes with it, is the kind of guy you want. That goes to Michael Jordan, that goes to Tiger Woods, and a few other great athletes throughout history. You know, but when you can go out there either on the mound or on the golf course, or on the basketball court, or on the football field, and you can do these things when they really count, that shows the true measure, and I think he's got it. And again, I'd love to see him come back. I've said this for the last couple of years. He just doesn't appear. You know, it's already like 3 years since he's been going through this. To me, he's got no chance.
Right. He's kind of like that guy who we're always hoping that he comes back. But yeah, meanwhile, it's been almost 1,000 days since he's even been, you know, close to winning or close to on the course. But you know, let's talk about the NBA, Bub. Free agent period is here. We've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of talk, a couple big re-signings, a lot of talk about where Kevin Durant's going to go. But I thought we'd, you know, preface this by going over a couple of the deals that have been made so far. You know, we got the number three free agent on the board re-signing with the Pistons. That's Andre Drummond, re-signed for 5 years, $130 million. And I think this is a good deal for the Pistons. I mean, you know, they started off real hot out of the gate last year, ended up, you know, not being so great. But Andre Drummond, I think, is one of the last, you know, true centers in the league. And I thought this was a big signing for the Pistons. I think they need him if they want to go forward. I mean, they got a great point guard in Reggie Jackson. And, you know, I think that they need this guy if they want to win. I mean, it's going to be tough to win in the East as long as LeBron is there. But I think this is a good move. And we got a couple other moves. DeMar DeRozan re-signed with the Raptors on a pretty big deal, 5 years, $139 million. We've got Bradley Beal re-signed with the Wizards, 5 years, $128 million. Nicholas Batum, a small forward from the Hornets, re-signed for 5 years, $120 million. And Hassan Whiteside, we'll talk about him a little after the break, re-signed for 4 years, $98 million. That's it for this part of the Sporting Edge. If you miss a segment, catch us on libertytalk.fm, and we will be back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. So, Bubba, I brought up Hassan Whiteside at the end of the break, saying that he re-signed with the Heat. And this is an interesting caveat to this deal. You know, he announced that he's staying with the Heat, but one of his, you know, conditions is that he wants, you know, he was willing to give up some salary for the Heat to sign Kevin Durant. I mean, the Heat, Kevin Durant has came out, said the Heat definitely on his list of possible suitors. And Hassan Whiteside said, came out and said he'd be willing to give up some salary for Kevin Durant to come to the Heat. I mean, what do you think about it? And you think Kevin Durant has any chance to sign there?
Well, I think, first of all, that's a great thing for a teammate. I mean, you know, in today's age of greed and money, you don't see many athletes willing to give up a little bit of their salary to win. Of course, you know, 80 million, 90 million, what's the real difference? But I like the idea. I like the theory. I think that Whiteside's a little soft, and you know, he's always injured. I mean, you know, I think he's when he's on the floor and he's healthy, he's an absolute monster. And as far as Durant, I would, in my mind, they're probably number four or five on Durant's hit list before he goes there. And there's been some chatter that Westbrook and Durant will both sign back with Oklahoma City for 1 year, and then go off together somewhere. So we'll see how that plays, but I don't think he's going to Miami. That would be my guess.
I tend to agree with you. I don't think Miami's the place, but you know, if there was a place that was four or five and there was one guy you needed to sell, I think that guy is Pat Riley, and that's basically the only reason I see this possibly happening. I mean, the Heat, they're pretty good. They're not great, and like I said, the East is always going to be tough with a guy like LeBron, but you know, Kevin Durant, if he thinks that's his best chance to win, and I think that's definitely a possibility, he might end up signing there. Joakim Noah finalized a deal with the Knicks. He's following his buddy Derrick Rose, and it's reported that the Knicks are prepared to pay him more than $70 million over 4 years. Now, if you looked at Noah's stat line from this past year, it was unimpressive, to say the least. About 6 points a game, 9 rebounds. The guy looked kind of like a shell of his old self. But I think this is a good deal for the Knicks. I mean, you can't fault them for going out and getting people who they think are going to help them win. And there's no doubt in my mind that while Joakim Noah is not the all-star center and defensive player of the year or of the league that he used to be, I think he can help this Knicks team win.
Well, I mean, Noah is a great player. I mean, he's not flashy. He does a lot of great things. The problem with him is, again, we go to the injury guys, that he's every year he's always got an injury problem. And, you know, you're not looking for him to score 20 a game. I mean, he will occasionally. You're looking for him to get 12, 13 boards. You're looking for him to intimidate in the paint. And you're looking for him to be part of the team. So I think it's a good signing for the Knicks. My problem with a guy like him is, again, he's just an injury guy that basically his whole professional career, he's been injured part of the time. Makes it a lot tougher for me to swallow.
Right. And the one thing I think he has working for him here, I mean, you know, he's not going to be the center or he is going to be the center, but not the center of attention on this team. I mean, they got Carmelo, they got Porzingis, they've got Derrick Rose now. I mean, if Rose and Noah can find a way to stay healthy, and Rose finds, you know, any sort of that form that he used to have back in 2010-2011 seasons with Chicago, this Knicks team is going to be a scary team. I mean, Carmelo Anthony is right on the back end of still being one of the top players in the NBA, but I don't even know if this is his team anymore. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis quickly showed us that he was all worth the number four pick that the Knicks selected him as last year.
I'm not a Carmelo fan. I think Carmelo's a selfish guy. I think that he proved it 2 years ago, staying before he had surgery. I think he's all about himself, and which is why he's still with the Knicks. So I'm not a fan, and I don't think that they can win with Carmelo Anthony. I don't think he's a winner. I think he's a loser. I think he got lucky at Syracuse, and you know it's a different story. But in the pros, nobody wins with him, in my opinion.
Well, we'll see about that next year. I think the most confusing deal for me so far was the Lakers signed Timofey Mozgov for 4 years, $64 million. That's $60 million a year. It sounds like a lot for a guy who wasn't even in the Cavs' starting rotation when it mattered most in the NBA Finals. I mean, Bub, this deal doesn't confuse me, but I mean, for a guy who, when I looked at him playing on the basketball court, my reaction was, eh, you know, he's okay. Is he worth $60 million a year for the Lakers?
Well, unfortunately, as you know, the salary cap's going up again this year, and the money is getting so big that it's like now monopoly dollars. I mean, the difference is what is the actual market value? This would go almost into a trading situation. You know, what is the value? And obviously, they established the value for a player of that caliber, like him or not, not very good. I mean, he's obviously had some great games over his career, but certainly I can't see them signing him for that either. But, you know, again, this goes back to what is the reality of the salary cap? What is the reality of what somebody's going to make at his similar thing? And I'm sure that they fit it in and didn't overpay for him based on what other players like him are going to go for.
Right. I agree with that. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of news coming up in the NBA in the next couple of weeks. And we'll keep you updated when we get back on the air next week. But yesterday marked the annual tradition on CBS Sports of Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. You know, Bobby Bonilla has not played in Major League Baseball, I think, for almost 15 years now. But yesterday was the day that he gets his annual check for $1,193,000 from the Mets, just as he will every year through the year 2035. And basically to give everyone, you know, a little heads up on what's going on. This deal was signed by the Marlins in 1996. Bonilla was traded to the Dodgers in 1998 and in a blockbuster trade that involved Gary Sheffield, Mike Piazza. Bonilla was later traded to the Mets, and he only played 60 games in 1999, hitting a very paltry 160, slugging .303. So the Mets basically saw fit to get rid of him before the 2000 season instead of paying him the $5.9 million. This actually happens in professional sports and Major League Baseball more often than you think. You just don't really hear about it. So these deferral payments, you know, come with an interest rate, and this is how we arrived at, you know, Bobby Bonilla being paid over $1 million a year to sit on his couch, you know, 15 years after he was in the league. So, I mean, a little bit of a crazy story. I actually never heard about this. This is the first year, but pretty good deal for a guy who's not playing ball anymore, huh, Bub?
Well, you know, it happens a lot, and this is what happened. You know, actually the first guy to get this deal, but he paid off much better, was Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson got $25 million from Dr. Buss over 25 years. And what the guys are, and the owners are very smart, okay? They're giving guys a big number, but now, obviously, he did not pan out. But if he did, the $1 million a year they'd be paying him now would be virtually nothing in the big scheme because, again, $1 million is a ton of money, but in pro sports, $1 million is nothing. You know, they talk about it all the time. Well, you can sign a guy for the league minimum, you know, and they'll pick up and the other team will pick up the other $6 million. So at the end of the day, it's fun, and I wish it was me, but it's still in the big scheme. It was just a deferred payment that the $1 million they gave him now, obviously $1 million is worth a lot less today than it was 20 years ago.
Right. And I think this next part, one word, Manziel. He says he's going to go sober. That was supposed to start yesterday. You know, I wanted to ask you, Bub, does he have any shot at getting back to the NFL? And more regarding to his personal life, does he have a chance to set his life straight?
No, I hope for him he sets his life straight. I mean, obviously, you know, alcohol, drugs are a struggle for many. And obviously, unless you've had the disease, it's hard to relate. And a lot of people are unsympathetic. So I hope for him, for his health and the health of others around him, because, you know, obviously, if you're a druggie or a drinker, you know, you get in a car, you can kill somebody. So for him, I hope he gets his life together. But 100%, if he does clean up his act, there's 100% there'll be a list of teams that will be happy to give him a shot, because one thing about sports, you know, he may be small, he may be what he is, but people have memories of how great he was at Texas A&M, and even the glimmers he showed at Cleveland occasionally, and there's always somebody willing to give a position player a chance like that, and that is obviously one of the problems in sports, where a lot of the guys that are better get away with things that guys that are not. And, you know, even if you go back to the running back, I can't remember his name now, but the running back from Baltimore, who, you know, was domestic abuse, he never got another chance. Why? Because he was already past his prime, so nobody wanted him. But at the end of the day, a young guy like Johnny Manziel, there'll be a list of teams that will give him a tryout if he comes and proves that he's sober.
Right, and I think you're talking about Ray Rice in that particular case. But, I mean, Johnny Manziel, like you said, say what you want about the guy, but when he was playing and showed flashes in the NFL, he's the guy who's got that it factor. I mean, you know, he's small, you know, not very big, doesn't have the greatest arm. He has a very good arm. You know, let's not stray from the facts. But, I mean, he has that it factor. And he's a guy, you know, like we talked about, you know, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan. He seems like a guy who wants the ball and can play under the pressure. Just really hasn't been able to play under the pressure of life so far. And that's only up to the opinion of people judging him. I mean, it seems up to him. He's having a great time, but you know, hopefully he figures it out a little bit, because he does have a chance to play in the National Football League. I think he definitely has a talent. He just has to, you know, figure out some other things. So yesterday was the first day of sobriety, supposedly. So we'll see where it goes from there. But that's it for this part of the Sporting Edge. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. We will see you after the break to talk some baseball. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. I lied. We have to go a quick little minute on fantasy football. I said we were going to talk about it last week. You know, basically everybody's coming out with their fantasy rankings so far, and I wanted to give a quick shout out in the top five, and I wanted, Bubba, I wanted to get your opinion. So rounding it out, this is a standard league, non-PPR. The experts have it ranked Antonio Brown number one, Odell Beckham number two, Le'Veon Bell number three, David Johnson number four, and Julio Jones number five. So that's three wide receivers, two running backs in the top five. What do you think of the top five, Bub? And is Antonio Brown the number one player in fantasy football right now?
I think it's obviously somebody's opinion, and it's probably okay. Is Antonio Brown the top one of the topics? Yeah, I mean, the guy gets you know, he gets targeted. He catches over 100 balls a year. I mean, so, you know, what more could you ask for from a guy like that?
Right. I mean, he is, I think, maybe the most exciting player next to Odell Beckham in the league the past, you know, two or three years. I mean, he catches 100 balls a year and is just as great of a, you know, as an inside threat as he is a deep threat. So I definitely, you know, think number one is appropriate for him. Odell Beckham is very close. David Johnson, I mean, that's a guy who, I mean, just stunned the league last year, filling in as Arizona's third running back. But, you know, we'll see, and we'll get into it a little more in the coming weeks. But, you know, right now I just wanted to you know, give you a little taste of what fantasy football is going to be like in the coming year. But we got to talk a little baseball. I know we usually do two segments, but with all this other stuff, we had to save, you know, the last 10 minutes. And I think that the biggest piece of news right now for me in the major leagues is Clayton Kershaw is going to the DL for some back problems. I mean, we saw him in his last start. Didn't look nearly as sharp, and I actually remember saying to you, Bub, you know, is there something maybe wrong with him? I mean, he's been not great. He's been so lights out and so electric, you know, basically the entire season, that it was kind of mind-boggling that he'd come out and put up that stinker against the Pirates.
Well, you know, and it's as you understand with the back, it's very tricky. And, you know, it's a horrible thing, because, you know, they're talking about possible disc damage, and they're talking about some other things. And, you know, this could be an extended injury that, you know, let's see, he could be fine in 2 weeks. You know, the cortisone shot that he got, the epidural, which I've had myself a number of times, Sometimes they work unbelievable, and you're right back out, and in 15 days, he could be out there back to his old self. But the other problem is it could be a major issue, and he may not respond well to it. Very obviously terrible for the Dodgers, but terrible for baseball. I mean, he is one of the most electric guys, and, I mean, he was on pace this year for, I don't remember, it was like 108 strikeouts to 9 walks or something, some ridiculous number. And, you know, his only thing he needs to do now is to perform in the postseason, because by far he's one of the greatest regular season pitchers of all time right now.
Right. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I think the Dodgers, they see the writing on the wall, and they actually went out and got some rotation help from the Braves. Bud Norris, you know, a guy who has been, I'd say, up and down in his major league career. He's never been great, but, you know, at a time like this, I think this is one of the things that the Dodgers need. I mean, they've got Scott Kazmir, and they've got a lot of injuries, too. I mean, Alex Wood was a guy who also came over from the Braves, who I thought, you know, was going to be at least average for the Dodgers. He's been okay, but he's been hurt, so you're not really doing anything for the team when you're hurt. So, I mean, the Bud Norris, I think, you know, this is what the Dodgers need, and I think they did a good job going out and getting him.
Well, you know, Bud Norris to me is a dog, but, you know, hopefully it'll help him out. He does some innings. And I thought the Dodgers, as I said to you, when the season started, when Baltimore cut Miguel Gonzalez, I thought they should have gone for him right away. You know, listen, they got a lot of problems. They didn't have a very good team to begin with. They got some great talent, but they were struggling, and this could be just a crucial blow to their hopes to even get to the wild card now, because certainly the Giants are hitting on all cylinders.
Right, and another interesting deal, you know, for the Padres is, you know, they traded a big reliever, and they got a young pitcher back. I mean, you probably haven't heard of Chris Paddock, you know, prior to Thursday's trade, but, I mean, you take a look at his stats, and this is a guy who I think will definitely be on everybody's mind next year, if not for, you know, the next 10 years. I mean, this guy hasn't allowed a hit in his last 3 starts. He's 20 years old. He's 6'4". Got a fastball in the high 90s with a great changeup. I mean, he seems like he could be a mid-rotation to top-of-the-rotation starter. And the Padres, you know, turned Fernando Rodney, who for 3 months they had him, a 40-year-old guy. I mean, he did great for these 3 months, but they turned him into a promising young arm. So, I mean, I've been the first guy to bash on the Padres for all the moves they made the past couple years, but, I mean, I got to pat him on the back for this one.
Well, this is a great move because they're not going anywhere, and you got to get you got to start to rebuild at some point. They went for it last year, didn't work out for them. Now they just stink, so now they have to rebuild, and they got some great pieces there. And, you know, you look at, I mean, I think the same thing with the Yankees. I mean, to me, the Yankees got to do some house cleaning here. I think they got to get rid of Aroldis Chapman. I think they got to get rid of, you know, maybe Miller, maybe even Betances. I mean, the Yankees are not going to be relevant, in my opinion, for a long time. I don't care what they say in New York. The Yankees suck. They're old, and they're breaking down like Carlos Beltran did, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right, and I mean, if the Yankee season, you know, wasn't already over, they clung to life this past week against Texas, you know, with 2 back-to-back walk-off wins. I mean, we were watching that Texas game on Wednesday night. They're down 7-2 going into the bottom of the 9th, come up with the game-tying 3-run homer by Brian McCann, then a walk-off by Didi Gregorius. But, you know, meanwhile, they're 8 games back, and I don't think they're catching the Orioles, who are now 5 games up on the Red Sox. I mean, the Red Sox confuse me. I mean, I thought a couple months ago a team, you know, with this great of a lineup was going to be at the top of this division, and they were going to eventually overtake the Orioles. But like we do talk about all the time, the starting pitching isn't there, and that's where they really run into trouble.
Well, actually, they went when they played them heads up. They were going back and forth between first, and now they've fallen apart, and already the Boston fans are clamoring for David Price's head. And, you know, listen, they don't have anybody behind them. I mean, Clay Buchholz stinks. Kelly's out. Purcell's okay, and Wright's been, listen, where would they be without Stephen Wright? This guy's been unbelievable. I mean, what a pitcher he's turned out to be.
Right, I mean, this is like the resurrection and the time travel of R.A. Dickey, if you remember a few years ago now. R.A. Dickey, you know, was one of the top pitchers in the league with the knuckleball, and Stephen Wright has been unbelievable this year. But, I mean, for all those Red Sox fans who want to get rid of David Price and are saying this is a bad deal now, I mean, get the hell out of here. There's no way this team is going anywhere without David Price. You know, say what you want about him. He hasn't pitched that great this year. But if you guys really think that, you know, you're going to do anything by getting rid of Price or saying that this is a bad deal, I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, David Price is one of the best pitchers in the majors, and he will revert back to form. You can mark my words on that one.
100%. I mean, they're, listen, he's 8-4. Yeah, he's got a high ERA. But at the end of the day, we've seen this 1,000 times. He will revert back to it, and I wouldn't be surprised in the second half if he puts up an ERA sub 2.5. He will find his way. The guy's been a winner for years. There is no question that he's going to come back. And believe me, I'd love to have him on the Cubs. If they want to give him up, they can send him right over our way. I will be happy to take him.
Yeah, that'd be quite a signing. But, Bub, how about the Indians? Hottest team in Major League Baseball right now. All the guys in the rotation are clicking. I mean, I think up and down, this might be the scariest rotation in baseball. And they've got a 6-game lead in the AL Central right now. 14-game win streak. I mean, this team is unbelievable.
You know, it's amazing that they finally, you know, got it together. You know, usually they were the late comers at the end of the year and they'd get hot. But now, before they happen, and they're pulling away. And you know what? Kluber, Bauer, and Tomlin, and Carrasco, and Salazar, I mean, those guys are just cooking and they are on fire. And, hey, they are a scary team and they could run away with it.
Right. And you look at the rest of the divisions. I mean, the closest division race, believe it or not, is Boston being 5 games behind Baltimore in the AL East. I mean, I think that's pretty unbelievable that this early into the season, you know, we don't have a race closer than 5 games. I'm sure that's going to change. I mean, we got a lot of baseball to play, but the division races really aren't that interesting right now. And I think, you know, I'm excited for the All-Star break. See if Mad Bum's going to hit in the Home Run Derby. He did hit a double the other night when he got penciled into the starting lineup, so that was pretty interesting. But you know, that's going to do it here for this week's edition of The Sporting Edge. I want to give a shout-out to Coastal Carolina for winning the Division I College World Series Baseball Championship. Took down Arizona in a best-of-three series, won 4-3 in the third game. Very exciting game. So congratulations to them. And that'll be all for this week's edition of The Sporting Edge. If you miss a show, you know where to find us at libertytalk.fm. We'll be back next week with more talk on professional sports. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Up in his first offering, just a bit outside.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.